and your brother and your dad are always at each other's throats. I could see something in her. Something sad and hopeless, but still alive. In my head, she had always been a villain. She was the reason my mom left us, and all she was doing was trying to fill a huge gap in our lives that could never be filled. No matter how many elaborate dinners she stuffed us with, she just didn't belong. No one did. Because our dad deserved to be miserable and alone there in his big house. It was so quiet outside that it seemed like even the crickets had stopped their song to listen to us. I'm sorry your mom isn't around now to see the woman you've become, and I know I'll never replace her, and that's not what I'm trying to do, said Estelle. I just wanted to tell you how I feel, because I never have, and I'm so sorry for that. I do care about you so much, Karina. I was sorry, too, that my mom needed to leave her family to find her peace. I couldn't forget that my dad, not Estelle, was responsible for that. You don't have to say anything. I just wanted to get it off my chest. Go take care of your brother, and I'll take care of your dad, she said, standing up from the swing. I waited until she was at the door and almost in the house before I called to her. Estelle? She turned back to look at me. Thanks for telling me all of that. I'm processing it, and I don't want to say the wrong thing, but I do appreciate it. I spoke as sincerely as I could. It was true, and she didn't deserve the confusion of whatever flustered words would come out of my mouth if I tried to make sense of all of it right then and there. She nodded. I'll take it, she said, her face breaking into a smile as she walked into the house.
Chapter 35. Kale. I pulled my truck up to Karina's curb. I had planned for Fisher and me to drive back to my place, but he was determined to bring that damn pie to Elodie, and anyway, he gave me an excuse to check on Karina. She likely would not be back yet if she had stuck around to nurse her father's ego for a little while after her brother stormed out. Fisher and I had stopped by the PX for him to grab a couple things, and I needed a new broom. We'd killed some time, and to my pleasant surprise, Karina's car was parked in the driveway when we arrived. I wonder what he said after I left, that motherfucker. Fisher was still angry at his dad for his reaction to the news and had been fuming ever since. Let's go inside, I encouraged him, pointing to the porch light that I'd fixed several weeks ago. We got out of the truck and I chuckled as we walked across the lawn. Karina's silhouette appeared in the doorway, an hourglass counting down the precious few days I had left before my time in Benning ran out. I'd become accustomed to those countdowns, time running out, when I wasn't sure if I'd even make it home, or through my next mission, or survive breaking down camp without being ambushed and blown to pieces. I used to believe I wouldn't live to see the ending of things, but there she was making me more hopeful. She was now in pajamas, a tiny green tank top that only covered half of her soft stomach, and little matching green shorts. If her brother wasn't here, I would pick her up and carry her to her room, take off those barely there clothes, and let all the anger and chaos disappear. Do either of you want some wine? Karina asked as her brother approached the doorway and I stepped onto the porch. Fisher shook his head. Nah. He held the pie in both hands and had been acting like the damn thing was a breakable piece of thin glass, barking at me to slow down over bumps and turns as I drove there. Just beer, if you have some, I shrugged. I planned on staying long enough that the one beer wouldn't do any harm by the time I had to drive back home. That was if she didn't invite me to stay the night, which was what I really fucking wanted. Karina's hair was tied back at the bottom of her neck with a different color of clip than she'd worn at dinner. This one was green to match her PJ set, and it made her eyes bright and almost mossy. God, she was beautiful. I'm so glad you're here, she sighed, hugging me right in front of her brother. All pretenses were gone, and I was more than okay with that. I inhaled the scent of her hair, and the sweet smell of her invaded my senses as I hugged her close. "Are you all right?" I asked. She nodded into my chest.
"Just exhausted, but I'm so glad you're here."
"Hey, lovebirds, where's Elodie? She said she was home,"
Fisher asked us. Karina leaned a little away from me, but kept her arms wrapped around my back.
"She's in my room."
I thought for sure your dad knew he had enlisted. I looked down at Karina. I wouldn't have said anything if I thought otherwise. Karina's green eyes studied me. I wouldn't blame her if she didn't believe that.
"His reaction surprised me," Karina said. "I thought he would have been ecstatic over him joining, honestly. I figured he would pat you on the back, Austin, and pop champagne. I'm confused why he acted that way."
"Because he wants to be in control of everything and everyone. Once that slips from him, he doesn't know how to handle it," I responded matter-of-factly.
"You really are a soldier who studies his enemy," she said,
playfully pinching at the small of my back.
"Did he say anything after I left?"
Fisher asked his sister, with his eyes closed. She shook her head.
"No. He went upstairs and never came back down, like the coward he is. But,"
she stopped for a second and looked at me,
"I did have a moment with Estelle that was kind of nice. Confusing, but nice."
"Dad's a prick, and now you're bonding with Estelle. That's so boring,"
Fisher grumbled, leaning his back against the couch.
"I'm not here for anyone's entertainment," Karina said, looking at both of us.
"I'm going to your room to hang out with Elodie. I need to unload this pie,"
Fisher announced as he walked into the kitchen. I heard the familiar rusty rattle of the silverware drawer and looked over at Karina, and she looked at me. I guess we were a pretty boring pair from the outside, so much so that Fisher would rather hang out with a pregnant Elodie than with us. No objection. I wanted the alone time with Karina. Karina's hands were wrapped around the wine bottle as she sat down on the couch, cross-legged. "You're watching Twilight again?" I asked her when I heard familiar music coming from the television.
"Yes. It's my happy place," she explained.
"Right." I laughed and chose the new chair, the one I haggled with Miss Rosa for at the market, and sat down. Fisher had left his phone on the coffee table and the screen lit up with a strand of texts, but I couldn't see whose name it was and really didn't give a shit. I leaned forward to turn his distracting phone over and reached for the book on the table. It was a book of poems. I skimmed through the pages. "I'm still confused how you can be the most skeptical person I've ever met, but you love poetry and fairy tales." The poem on the page in front of me was about a lying, betraying lover. I turned the small pages. The next was about unrequited love.
"Not the time to read this,"
I thought to myself, and tossed it back onto the table.
"I never said I like fairy tales,"
she corrected me. "Yes, you did. Not only that, you also tell them all the time." She turned her body to face mine.
"Is that a complaint?"
The little smile on her face had me wondering if she was already a bit buzzed. "No, ma'am, that is not a complaint." She laughed at me and lifted the wine bottle above her head to check how much was left. When she looked over at me, I was staring at her mouth. She caught me. "Want to go to the porch?" I asked, a little scared that she might throw something at me. Instead, her face lit up and she nodded, grabbing her wine and a blanket, and pushed herself off the couch. "Aren't you cold?" I asked, as she sat down on the cement and crossed her legs again. Karina shook her head.
"Nope, this thing is thick."
She held up the corner of the blanket she was sitting on and covered with.
"Want some?"
she offered. I nodded, even though it was warm out. It was in the 60s, and I loved the perfect fall weather.
"Tonight was a shit show. I would never say this to my brother, but I'm actually kind of glad you told our dad off. I know that's selfish, but it felt good to not be the disappointment or the one who was pissing him off for once."
"You're the least selfish person I've ever met," I reminded her as I sat down next to her. She reached for my hand.
Oh, and get this. Estelle and I had this weird moment on the porch where she was talking about how she dreamed we would be close before she met me, and I think she meant it. It's confusing, and I'm still reeling from it, but it made me question how much I've judged her and how awful I've been to her. It's really my dad's fault, not hers. She just married him, imagining a completely different and new life than the one she has.
Even though I didn't care for Estelle, knowing that she and Karina had found a connection made me happy for her. I knew how badly she needed to be heard and seen by the people around her, especially her family. I felt the warmth of her body move near mine as she lay back and stared up at the sky, still holding on to my hand.
The worst part is, it made me miss my mom even more. I don't know what's wrong with me lately, but even though my thoughts are all over the place, they keep coming back to her. I miss her more than ever, but I can't figure out why.
I lay back next to her and dangled my feet off the edge of her porch. It was like I could see her words floating with the stars.
But she was so fucked up in so many ways. The more I think about it, the crazier it makes me. I keep trying to analyze my mother's choices and her life, like her friends.
Karina paused mid-sentence.
Did she even have any? I don't. I have you, Elodie, and my brother. But soon all of you will be gone.
My stomach lurched. She was right. Elodie is here. She just won't be living in your house. I tried to take a little of her anxiety away.
Yeah, for now. But once the baby is born and Philip comes back, I'll barely see her. Plus, chances are high that they will get stationed somewhere else. Then what will I do? Austin will be gone too. And I'll be here in this house by myself. I'll have no one. I'll go to work and come home to an empty house.
Anxiety was coming off her in waves. I wanted to calm it. I hated how alone she was in this world. She deserved to be surrounded by people who loved her. You have me. She let go of my hand to pick at the stitching on the blanket between us. Her silence made me lose my breath.
For how long, though?
She asked me, her eyes looking toward the night sky. I wish I knew the answer. She sighed into the silent night air, then rolled over, propping herself up on one elbow. I stayed on my back, watching her closely. The tips of her hair fell onto my face as she tried to clip her curls back up. I brushed them back with my fingers, and she closed her eyes.
Every aspect of my life feels uncertain. I can't handle you being a part of that. I keep trying to just ignore the reality, our reality. But it hurts. I wish you could be my stability,
she said, then pointed to the brightest star above us and closed her eyes. I'd like to be, I told her, wishing on the same star. I continued to run her hair through my fingers, and she dropped her head down to rest her chin in my palm.
Are we just hurting each other more by doing this?
She quietly questioned. I didn't know the answer. If it were anyone else in our position, I would say they were crazy, wasting their time and energy, and to cut their ties and run the other way. But when it came to Karina, I couldn't do that. And to my very pleasant surprise, she couldn't seem to either. Maybe, but it's going to hurt either way. My words were ludicrous, but they were true. We might as well go as far as we can, right? Isn't that what life is about? Love and pain, happiness and suffering? Who says we can't be happy until the suffering begins? Karina's eyes shone as they filled with silent tears. She blinked them away before one could fall and lay back down, resting her head against my pounding heart. All I could think about was how good it felt, like getting a bandage with numbing cream wrapped over a fresh, bloody wound. My heart was pounding, more afraid of the future than I'd ever admit, but at least it was still beating. For now.
Chapter 36. Karina. That Thursday, my birthday eve, I was sitting on the couch, scrolling on my phone, looking at a picture I had taken of Kale asleep in my bed. I moved to Twitter, and the first thing I saw was a collage of celebrity red carpet photos at a movie premiere. I lifted the phone to Elodie to show her an up-and-coming actress who starred in one of her favorite Netflix movies, and she squinted to see from where she sat on the other end of the couch. She looks so pretty. How much does it cost to look like that? I sighed, zooming in on her clear skin and sleek hair. Your skin is beautiful. Elodie scooted a little closer to me to look at my screen again. And her dress is hideous. She giggled, then looked down at her own outfit. Black Nike shorts that certainly were mine, because none of Elodie's clothes fit her anymore, and an oversized t-shirt that I could have sworn was Austin's, with a stain that looked like hot sauce or ketchup. I had a $3 overnight hair mask on, and we both had sheet masks stuck to our faces. Elodie's was sliding down her nose, and some of the serum was dripping down her neck. I was in pajamas too, an old t-shirt from my brother's football days, and cotton shorts, legs stubbly. I wiped my dirty phone screen clean with the bottom of my shirt. Look at us, how glamorous we are, judging the most beautiful people in the world. I rolled my eyes, zooming back in on the actress's complexion. I mean, seriously, not one pore showed on her perfectly contoured face. Speak for yourself. Elodie stuck her tongue out at me and waved her hand over her messy blonde hair. Once this baby is out, it's over for all these girls. Even the Jenners. She flicked her wrist, laughing. She had a way of making me feel special, like a normal girl with a real best friend. I can hear you from the kitchen, Austin said, making his way into the living room with a bowl of cereal in his hand. You two are beautiful. Don't be ridiculous. He sat on the floor next to the couch in front of Elodie, and she eyed his cereal bowl. Want some? He offered, holding it up to her. She nodded and he dipped the spoon into the bowl, Cheerios with milk and sugar, the way our mom always had it. Austin spoon-fed Elodie, and if they weren't my brother and my best friend, I would have felt like the third wheel. If I had the money, I would be prettier. Elodie spoke while the cereal crunched between her teeth. They have lasers for everything now, and Amazon has these little sucker things that make your pores and stretch marks disappear. She lifted the bottom of her shirt to show the thin purple marks on her pale skin. You don't need it. I do. Plus, pores don't shrink. Didn't you learn that in training? I teased her.
Why are girls like this? Austin moaned, turning to his phone, his fingers tapping away on the screen. You two are being so weird right now.
I started typing into the search bar on my Instagram. Well, because women on the internet look like this. I showed him the latest bikini picture of a popular Instagram model living a lavish life with a surgically crafted body. I followed her only as a point of comparison with myself. While she was in Bali, on the edge of a mountain in a tiny, tiny orange bathing suit, I was sitting on my couch with cheese puff-stained fingers, wishing Kale would text me like he'd promised to. I had barely heard from him today, even though he said he would text me when he got out of his discharge orientation that supposedly ended at 7 o'clock, already an hour ago.
No one looks like that in real life.
Austin grabbed the phone from my hand and tossed it onto a pillow on the floor.
Trust me, I've met girls online, and when we met in person...
Elodie shot Austin a look of disgust, and he stopped mid-sentence.
Just saying, don't compare yourselves to edited photos.
You don't get it because you don't have the same pressures that we do, I explained, peeling the now dry sheet mask off my face and tossing it onto the table. Elodie did the same, but she balled hers up and put both of ours into her empty snack bowl. It was beyond fucked up how much I criticized my own body, my mind, my emotions, whereas I was quick to defend Elodie when she put herself down. I knew the unattainable beauty standard was beyond toxic, but I couldn't help it. So many people had paid a lot of money to brainwash me through media and marketing since childhood, and my obsessions were nearly impossible to undo.
Well, Martin seems to like you, orange-stained fingers and all,
my brother laughed. I used my cheese puff-stained middle finger to flip him off.
Speak of the devil,
he said, looking to his side toward the front door. I popped up off the couch. K, Kyle! You're here! I didn't care to hide my excitement as I wiped my fingertips on my shorts. If I hadn't missed him so much, I would have been embarrassed by the hardened mask on my hair or that he may have heard the conversation with my brother and Elodie.
I rang your doorbell, he shrugged. But it must be broken.
I sighed. Of course it was. I'll add it to the list, I told him, as he closed the door and started to take his boots off.
How'd it go? My brother asked him.
Kale was focused on Austin, and that gave me the opportunity to take him in without anyone noticing. He was wearing his ACUs, and his clean-shaven face highlighted his sharp jawline and intense, dark eyes. I studied him as he knelt down, his fingers hooked around the laces, to undo the heavy tan boots on his feet.
Fine. It ran long because some dumbass kept asking the same questions over and over. So, what's the verdict? Good news, bad news, no news?
Austin pressed him for information. Come on, tell us, Elodie pleaded. Apparently, this appointment was something they both knew about. When he mentioned it to me, Kale hadn't made it sound important. I felt a sting of jealousy.
Well,
he started to say, looking directly at me.
They're letting me out of the army. With a medical discharge.
Fuck yeah!
Austin put the bowl on my table and sat up taller, kneeling now. He cheered like he was watching a sporting event.
I'm pretty much all cleared. Just have some reintegration classes and physical therapy to complete. But they're letting me out. I can't believe it.
He closed his hand over his chin, halfway hiding his smile. I suddenly wanted to be with Kale without an audience. He looked so youthful and elated with the close proximity of freedom beaming off him. His optimism was infectious. Even I had to fold my lips in to stop from grinning. I was just about to say something when Austin stood up to hug Kale, breaking our eye contact. He hit his hands hard against Kale's back, and I wiped at my eyes, selfishly wishing Elodie and my brother weren't here.
Just like that. No strings attached, Austin asked when Kale pulled back from him.
Seeing Austin's brotherly affection toward Kale surprised me every time. I had never seen him like that with any of his other friends and acquaintances. Their relationship made me feel like someone else was looking out for Austin, and that gave me a little peace of mind. On the other hand, it made me sad knowing they would more than likely drift apart and eventually lose contact once Austin left for basic training. I didn't want to think about the date approaching. It was coming up very, very soon. My stomach knotted at the thought. There was so much change happening around me, I wasn't sure how much more I could handle.
I'm not stupid enough to think there aren't any strings attached. This is the United States Army we're talking about here.
Kale said in a clipped tone.
But I'll take what I can get. At least it's one step closer. It came faster than I thought. Even my first sergeant said someone must have pulled some strings.
What happens now? You're not moving away yet, are you? Elodie asked. Philip will be back. Her meek voice was more of a plea than a statement. Austin looked at her and then at me. I couldn't read the expression on his face.
Atlanta's been the plan for a while now. It's just a question of when. I thought it would be months before I heard anything about getting discharged.
Kale paused.
It takes some guys over a year to get out, but here I am. I haven't had time to process what happened today.
He walked around the couch, closer to where I stood, and his uniform socks left marks on my old hardwood floors that I knew I wouldn't ever want to erase. Sometimes, when I looked at him, I felt like he belonged here, like he was going to be a permanent part of my life. His stamp was already all over my house, from the shower, to the porch light, to my bed.
I am happy for you, Elodie exclaimed. But I don't want you to go. You are my first friend here.
She stood up to hug him, squeezing his hand, which was so much bigger than hers. I looked away as he rubbed the other hand across her back. I stood there in front of the couch,
the back of my calves pressed against it. Like a needy child, I wanted it to be my turn. I'm not going far. Atlanta's just a drive away. Don't worry, he kept on assuring Elodie. My eyes shot up at him. I knew he loved Atlanta, and I knew I couldn't force him to stay near me in Fort Benning, a huge trigger for his trauma and PTSD. But hearing him say it again and again had me panicking a little. His departure was a constant thought in the back of my head, especially now that we were in whatever kind of relationship we were in. Both of us did our best to avoid the topic outright, but here it was staring us in the face. I wondered just how limited our time was, and if I would wake up one day and he would be gone. Austin's voice interrupted my depressing thoughts.
Have you told anyone else yet?
No, I came straight here,
Kale responded, looking at me. Not at Austin, not at Elodie. I was so relieved that he'd come here first. Austin and Elodie celebrated Kale's news like he was family. And there I was, the brat in the corner, too lost in her head to join in, but full of internal commentary.
Everything is going to be so different without you here, Elodie said.
Both of you. Her voice cracked a bit, and Austin sweetly patted her back. I knew Elodie would miss Austin, too. He had become like a brother to her since he'd been back. But she would have her baby and her husband soon to fill her life. I hadn't heard her and Philip fighting since before the camping trip. Even if things were rocky between the two of them, I was sure it would get better once he was back home by her side. I wanted everything in Elodie's life to go well, to be full of happiness and laughter, sunlight and peace. I would be losing my twin, and my best and pretty much only friend by the time Philip returned. I had already lost my mother. I wouldn't mind losing my father. And now, Kale was leaving too. So much change. So much chaos. I went from wanting to congratulate Kale and wrap my arms around him and pull him into my room, to wishing we had never gotten back together. But then a moment later, I wanted him to hug me and never let go. These circular thoughts made me dizzy.
I need to call my ma. I haven't told her yet,
Kale said, pulling his phone from his uniform pocket and walking toward the front door. I nodded, still not able to say a word.
Wow, I can't believe he's getting out.
Austin spoke over Kale's mumbled voice on the porch. My brother's head began to hang as he said,
All of this is starting to feel real. Me leaving for basic, Martin getting discharged.
Stop talking about it. You're making me and the baby sad.
Elodie looked at him and then at the clock hanging on the wall.
Oh no, it's almost 8 and I need to run to the PX before they close.
I had told her I would go with her when she mentioned it this morning. Now that Kale was here and we had so much to talk about, I regretted my offer.
I got a coupon for one of those fancy video monitor things and it expires tomorrow, she explained to Austin, who looked confused over the urgency of going tonight.
She looked at me, then toward my front door to Kale.
Do you still want to go?
She knew me well enough to know that my mind was on Kale right now, and the last thing I wanted to do was go to the PX. I started to reply.
I'll go,
Austin said to Elodie, either to save me or just to get out of the house. Regardless, I was grateful for the interruption.
Yes, she smiled. You can go with me since she has other things to do,
she teased, nodding toward Kale on the phone outside.
Plus you can help me carry stuff. Oh, I also want strawberries and that whipped stuff. What's it called again, Karina?
Cool Whip. She smiled and walked over to the coat rack on the wall near the door. She threw a hoodie on over her pajamas and slid her feet into a pair of dirty white platform sneakers. She always looked so effortlessly adorable and stylish.
Do I have anything on my face?
Elodie asked, patting her fingers against her dewy, freshly masked skin. I shook my head and she smiled. I could see out the window that Kale was walking around my yard now, his army uniform blending in with the dead grass. He turned around and was smiling,
a smile that warmed me from the inside out. I couldn't begin to imagine how happy his mother was. It almost brought me to tears.
Let's go now, please. Are you ready?
Elodie tilted her head, smiling at Austin. He nodded. We'll be back.
Do you need anything? Want some more cheese puffs?
Elodie asked as she shoved her keys and phone into the front pocket of her hoodie. I shook my head. I'm saving money, remember? I reminded her right as Kale walked up the porch steps and opened the door.
Where are you all going?
Kale asked my brother.
Elodie and me are going to the PX, my brother replied.
Elodie grabbed onto Austin's sleeve, practically dragging him out the door.
We need to go, the store is closing.
When do you think they'll be back?
Kale checked the time on his phone.
He'll need a ride to my place, but I can text him to have Elodie drop him off there when they're done.
He looked around the living room, his attention focusing on every little detail of his surroundings, as usual. It was one of the things I found most fascinating about him. Instead of a single book, Kale was an entire library. The sheer amount of information he had stored in that brain of his could probably change the world if he shared it more. His intelligence made him magnetic, quick-witted, and wise. It also made him annoying and cocky and irritating at times, but not right now. Right now, he was fascinating, and mine, and we were finally alone. Kale and I were the sun and the moon, slowly rotating around one another in the middle of my living room floor. I hoped his mind was going to the same place that mine was.
So, what now?
He asked me. I shrugged, slowly stepping a little to the right as he did the same to the left. We were dancing. Our minds, our bodies. I wondered who would pounce first. The circular thoughts were back, making me dizzy. I walked over to the window and looked to see if Elodie and Austin had left. They're gone. I breathed a sigh of relief. I had been dying to have a moment alone with Kale since he showed up at my house. Even though I had seen him on Tuesday night, I'd missed him so much. He stepped toward me and leaned his arm on my new chair from the flea market. For the rest of my life, I'd never be able to look at that chair without thinking of him. If I were the type of girl who believed in destiny or serendipity, I would see the day at the flea market as just that. It was the day that began the road back to us for Kale and me. But we were soon going to be divided again, not by deceit or secrets, just by life and the fucked up way the universe decided it would be.
I'm sorry I told all of you at the same time. I wanted to tell you about the discharge alone first. I tried to call you, but you didn't answer,
he said, lifting his other arm toward me. I looked at the couch and coffee table for my phone. I don't know where I put my phone. It's okay. I'm just glad I didn't find out last, I said quietly.
Come here, Karina.
Kale's voice drew me to him like I was being hypnotized. He wrapped his arms around me, one by one, and I looked up at him and he studied my face. I really am happy for you. I know how important this is, I said with a warm smile.
Would you come with me?
It took me a few seconds to understand what he was asking. Come with you to Atlanta? I repeated slowly, separating the words with a half second between them. He nodded.
I know you have your life here, but selfishly, I want you to come with me. I don't want to be away from you.
Could you stay here? I knew the answer, but if he could be hopefully selfish in this moment, so could I. Kale shook his head.
I can't. I can't be here in this town at this post. I don't know that I'll ever be able to move on with my life as it is, but I can't live here in this graveyard. I want to be with you. Fuck, I've never wanted anything more in my life, and I don't know how the hell I will leave, but Karina, I have to. I hope you understand that.
His words, carefully crafted and honest,
hurt me to the bone. I wasn't hurt by him, but by our reality. It felt so unfair. I would never ask him to stay here, to suffer and be reminded of the hell he had been through, but I knew I couldn't leave this place. I had many reasons, from my house to my work to not being ready to take the risk of losing my independence for the possibility of love. Kale and I had grown together in our own little bubble, and then it had popped. Imagine how messed up things would be if I sold my house, moved to Atlanta, and we broke up again. The world was wide, too wide for me to even contemplate.
I know your brain must be in overdrive, but you don't need to worry about any of this right now, especially not today.
Kale brought his hand up to touch my cheek. The rough calluses on his palms brushed against my skin, and I let out a sigh of relief, even though there was no resolution. I knew that nothing would change today, but it wasn't easy to forget everything that would be taken away from us. I was genuinely beyond happy for Kale to be released from this place that was like a prison to him, no matter how it would affect me. I'd choose his peace and freedom over my own needs any day, even if that meant breaking my own heart. The expiration date for us was approaching right at the time when everything felt so perfect. Too perfect. With each passing second, we had less and less time together. The comfort and healing in my life that he had made possible would be gone. Long distance was the only viable plan, but hardly a solution since that rarely ever worked in the end. My head began to ache. A high-speed train of worries plowed through my brain. Kale's hands were shaking a bit when he brought them up to the base of my ears. He cupped them over both and kissed my forehead. My shoulders dropped.
"Shh,"
he whispered against my forehead before pressing his lips against my skin. It worked like magic, like noise-canceling headphones. My mind had gone from running through a screaming stream of increasingly worse possible scenarios to complete and full silence. I closed my eyes, gripping the starchy material of his uniform covering his arms. I held on to him, and he kept my ears covered as he dipped his head down, bending to line his eyes up with mine. I pulled at his uniform and kissed him hard. His mouth was warm and tasted like lingering coffee with a hint of sadness. I opened my mouth farther, more desperately. His hands went to my hips, and he squeezed them, our bodies pressed against the side of the hard chair. Kale's hands pushed the thin fabric of my pajama shorts up on the sides, and he massaged the thick pockets of flesh between my hips and thighs. I moaned as he unlocked the part of me that was touch-deprived, salacious, and melting into him. He hitched one of my legs onto the arm of the chair, spreading me open, and slid his fingers across me. I was already soaking through the fabric, and the moment he touched me, I ripped at his uniform jacket, pushing it down his arms and onto the floor. His tan t-shirt was still on, but the definition of his body was easily seen under it. I lifted it up over his head as fast as I could. His touch immediately found me again. This time he slid a finger inside, slowly pumping, then adding another. I held onto his back, my nails digging into his beautiful skin. I was frenzied, adrenaline pumping through me, but Kale was moving slowly, tenderly kissing and licking my neck, breathing my name into my ear, making goosebumps cover my entire body. His fingers were moving slowly, teasingly, and it just made me need him more. Gently, he moved me to the front of the chair and sat me down, his skillful touch staying between my legs as he used one hand to pull my shorts and panties down one leg without fail. I could feel my body building to bliss as he dipped his head down, gripped both sides of my ass, and pressed his warm tongue against me. I tried to grip his shoulders, but my mind and body were out of control. I clawed the sides of the chair, saying his name as I came, his tongue swirling and swirling,
I thought I might pass out from the pleasure as my back rose, my legs stiffened, and waves crashed over me as his lips sucked my already throbbing clit. I was so sensitive, but didn't want him to stop. I needed more. He was so composed as he lifted his head up, slowly circling me still, his lips glistening under the light. God, he was so beautiful.
Happy birthday, Karina,
he said, kissing the inside of my thighs as I slowly came back to a much more blissful reality than I had been in when he first arrived. I love you, I told him between breaths. His eyes caught mine, and I could tell they were full of surprise. For two people who felt so intensely for one another, we didn't say the words as often as we felt them. I knew how he felt, and he knew how I felt, and that's what mattered. Cale rose to his knees, and I wrapped my thighs around his back, pulling him closer to me. He kissed my cheeks, both sides, and my lips. I could taste myself on him as he spoke into my open mouth.
I love you. More than anything.
His words were simple, but I felt my eyes stinging as he kissed me again. The ache in my heart was healed. For now. Chapter 37.
Happy birthday,
Cale whispered before I even opened my eyes. He had stayed the night, and his warm body was wrapped around me. The heat from his skin was more intense than the sun creeping across my bedroom. I'm so over my birthday, I groaned and blinked my eyes open. His head was on my chest, our bodies tangled together.
And why is that?
We already celebrated twice, at the campground and at my dad's. And honestly, the second one really made me never want to acknowledge my birthday again for the rest of my life.
But I got you something. Should I return it?
Cale asked me in a low voice. You did? I sat up a little and he lifted his head to look at me. He nodded.
The materials are in the back of my truck. Well, some of them anyway. The rest are at my place.
Materials? He nodded again and kissed my bare shoulder. I shivered and he kissed my skin a second time. What kind of materials? I asked him. I had no clue what he could be up to.
Well?
He licked his lips and squinted a bit as the light cast across his beautiful face.
Let's get out of bed and I'll show you.
He took me by the hand and gently dragged me out of the bed. I grabbed a hoodie from the floor in case Elodie or Austin, or both, were in my living room. I handed Cale his shirt and he slid it over his head. The house was silent as we walked down the hallway and into the living room. Cale led me to the front door and opened it. I was confused, to say the least. He stepped out and I followed, standing awkwardly next to him, wishing we were still in my bed, but excited about whatever he had planned for me.
I know how much you love porch swings.
I almost squealed before he finished.
So first, I'm gonna build you a small deck. And then hang a swing on it. That is, after I fix the crumbled edges of your porch. It's in pretty bad shape, and
I covered his mouth with my hand, and he playfully bit my palm. Are you serious? My eyes stung with emotion. I slung my arms around his neck and squeezed him, making both of us tilt back a bit, but his strength kept us from falling backward off my porch. Cale, this is... That is... I have no words. I kept hugging him. I wanted to tell him that he didn't have to do all of that, that it would take so much time and so much energy, but I wasn't going to let my anxiety get in the way of such a thoughtful, albeit outrageous, gift. He was bringing one of my dreams to life, my own porch swing on my own porch. I was so thankful I could have burst at the seams. As Cale started to unload a toolbox and long wooden boards from the back of his truck, I watched him for a bit, still in awe that he had given me the best gift I'd ever received.
Do you need help? I asked him while sitting on my butt on the porch steps.
Don't even think about it. Go take a shower or lie back down. Don't lift a finger.
He nodded toward the house. I couldn't help but smile. So this is what it was like when someone did something for you just to make you happy, without the goal of getting something in return.
Fine. I don't want to go back to bed, but I'll take an everything shower, I told him, pushing my palms against my knees to stand up. My thighs were delightfully sore from our night together.
An everything what?
He asked, dropping an armful of wood next to the porch. It's like an everything bagel, but in shower form. I saw it on Instagram. It's basically every possible step of a shower. Double shampoo, shaving, body scrub, and wash. I went on, thinking about the woman whose nighttime routine I watched daily. If only I had a nicer bathroom and maybe more self-confidence, I could film my self-care.
The internet is a weird, weird place,
Kale groaned with a hint of amusement. I stepped down the stairs to stand in front of him.
Speaking of the internet, you should follow me on Instagram.
I put a hand on my hip. It was a little sore, too. I stretched a little, twisting my torso. Kale looked pleased.
Okay,
he said simply, pulled his phone from his pocket and handed it to me.
Passcode is 0917.
I lit up. I had never seen a guy give a girl their phone passcode so casually, but I had seen plenty of women finding insane infidelities on their partner's phones. I get to follow myself? How romantic, I teased, rolling my eyes, and Kale bent to kiss my forehead.
That's as romantic as Instagram can get.
He shrugged and got back to work without another word, leaving me holding his phone. I was beyond tempted to look through it, from the photos to the texts, but I stopped myself. Not today. I typed in the passcode and wasn't surprised that he barely had any apps, no texts, no little red notification dots anywhere. I opened his Instagram and began to type my name. It was already in the search bar. My heart did a little squeeze and I looked across the yard to him. Ugh, I loved him. Plain and simple. It was these tiny moments that made me love him more and more. I followed myself and couldn't help but click on the DM icon. It was empty. Did he delete his messages? Or was he the only person to never get a direct message on Instagram? Okay, enough snooping, Karina. I hit the sidebar on his phone, putting it to sleep, and left it on the porch.
I'm going inside, I called to him.
He nodded, lifting a bucket out of the bed of the truck, and smiled at me. I went inside and decided to make him breakfast in lieu of taking an everything shower. I wanted to do something for him, even a small gesture, since he was going to be spending his time working on my porch. I checked my fridge to see what I had. There was a can of biscuits in the back, and I knew I had sausage in the freezer. Checking the expiration date on the can, I tried to remember the last time I made gravy and biscuits. Growing up, I had them at least twice a month. My mom had the best recipe. I'd learned it from her, and I'd only used it twice, both times for Elodie. I grabbed the roll of sausage from the freezer and turned on the hot water in the sink. It wasn't the best way to defrost meat, but whatever. I gathered the other ingredients, flour, milk, pepper, turned the oven to preheat, and played music on my phone, allowing myself to get lost in the game of house Kale and I were playing. About 30 minutes later, I nearly jumped out of my skin when Kale came up behind me as I was stirring the sausage gravy. I was singing along to Taylor Swift, totally in my own world. He laughed, his breath warm against my neck.
I smelled the sausage and had to come see what you were up to,
he said, lips against my skin. I shivered as he pulled the neckline of my hoodie down a little to kiss my neck. I made gravy and biscuits and was going to come get you in like 2 minutes. Just need to add more pepper, I said, grabbing the pepper shaker, shaking it heavy-handed until a pile was on top of my gravy. My mouth was watering.
Yum. Thank you. What happened to your bagel shower?
Kale's arm squeezed my torso gently. I laughed. It's an everything shower.
Right.
I could feel him smiling against my cheek from behind me. I decided to be domestic and feed you instead. I playfully pushed my hips back against his solid body. I turned the stove off and told him to sit down at the table as I brought plates and water and pulled the hot biscuits off the sheet pan and onto another plate. Kale kept licking his lips and smacking his gums, a sign that the smell had him starving too. I made his plate and hoped for the best. His eyes went wide when he took the first bite.
Holy shit, this is so good,
he said, his mouth full of a big bite. I smiled, totally satisfied and proud of myself. Thank you. It's a secret family recipe, I whispered, cupping my hand next to my mouth.
I won't tell anyone, as long as you don't tell my ma that these are the best biscuits and gravy I've ever had.
He dove his fork into the rest of a biscuit. I was glad I'd made the whole roll. My mind went to my mom as I took a bite. The taste was so distinctively her that it made my chest ache a little. It was comforting and painful at the same time. I needed to climb out of this spiral before it went too far. Speaking of your mom, tell me how excited she was. I raised a brow, pivoting the conversation to Kale.
My ma is too long of a story, he said. She's happy about my discharge, but her health has taken a turn.
Concern shot through me. It wasn't like I knew a ton about his mom, but I did know how important she was to him. Do you want to talk about it? I asked, touching his face gently. He shook his head.
Not today. Not on your birthday, please.
I nodded once, agreeing to his wishes even though I was worried. I chewed my food slowly. And Mendoza? Kale looked over at me.
Mendoza's having a shitty week, actually.
Why? What happened?
Julian has some sort of problem with his eyes. More than needing glasses. They're talking surgery, potential blindness. Gloria is a mess.
He looked at me, then winked to lighten things up.
I'm really bringing down the mood on your birthday.
My heart broke for them. Gloria must be in so much pain. I wondered if it would be weird to reach out to her, but decided that since Kale was telling me in confidence, it wouldn't be a good idea. Kale's hands ran over his shaved head. He had a fresh haircut. I could tell by the way his hair was buzzed into a perfectly straight line around his neck and forehead. Is there anything they can do? I asked, knowing it wasn't likely.
Not really. Just depend on the healthcare system to figure it out. And Mendoza isn't great at depending on anyone.
Except you, I reminded him. He sat his fork down and nodded, a small smile taking over his face.
Yeah, except me.
I watched Kale's expression change as he sat quietly for a minute. I could tell his mind was drifting to more serious thoughts about his friend.
I just wish he would see someone for himself. Not just Julian, but he really needs help. It's becoming more and more apparent with every episode he has. I've told him that more times than I can count. He's too proud, but it's not about ego, it's just the way he was raised. Like me, to suffer in silence. Even with two therapists, multiple meds, and weekly doctor visits, I'm not fixed yet.
He tapped his temple, and the tone in his voice made me shiver.
Mendoza's losing control of his family's well-being. Yet another crisis in his life, he continued. When I met him a few years ago, he was a totally different person. Seeing violence, being in the middle of life and death, it'll fuck you up. It's really, really fucked him up. And now his kid's hurting. It's not fair.
Kale's jaw clenched, and his throat moved as he swallowed.
And the worst part is, even if he wasn't a prideful motherfucker, he'd be crazy to say he needed help. He'd be terrified that if he says anything about how he's feeling or what he's going through, they will kick him out of the army, and he won't be able to support his family. That's how they get a lot of guys to stay in.
Mendoza has kids who need healthcare, and if these tests come back and say Julian needs more help, they'll need it more than ever. It's scary, thinking about life after the army, even for me. I don't know who I am without my uniform.
Kale looked down at his plate.
And I don't have anyone else to worry about but myself.
His words stung me a bit, and he could tell. I had sat quiet and listening, eager for everything he was sharing with me. But this hurt.
I mean financially,
he clarified, and I relaxed a little.
My sister and my ma, hell, they would be fine if I died. They'd be better off with my life insurance from the government.
Not funny. I pushed at his shoulder, finding his casual talk about death unamusing. Do you really feel like that? Like you don't know who you are? He nodded.
It's fucking scary. I had this plan my whole life to join and stay until retirement. And now that I'm really getting out, it's hitting me like a ton of bricks. I'm so used to just trying to stay alive. I'm good at being a soldier. Great at it, honestly. I don't know what else I'm good at or what will happen when I take this uniform off for the last time.
You're great at remodeling, and that's a huge market. Those rental companies, the ones who are using houses like hotels, are really taking off in big cities. I keep seeing them online. I didn't know what to say. I didn't have an answer for his big questions, so I pathetically offered some small encouragement. Kale's soft smile turned into a grin.
Thank you, Karina. I hope it works out the way I want it to.
I inched closer. Me too. I couldn't look away from him.
I think it's your dad who's been helping me get out earlier, by the way.
He said it so casually, I almost choked. What?
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty certain it's him. No one gets out this fast without a senior officer pulling the strings. I asked around, and nobody had a clue why this was happening. Only your dad knows my circumstances. I'll tell you when I know more, but I have a feeling it was him.
I was confused. Why would he do it? The whole thing made me feel slightly ill. It seemed like a good thing, but my dad never did nice things for people without a selfish motive, and he surely wouldn't go out of his way to help someone he despised as much as Kale.
Who knows?
He shrugged.
I'm assuming he just wants me away from you as soon as possible.
I don't like the idea of him meddling in your life. I mean, I'm glad it's to your advantage in this case, but there has to be a catch. I know my dad.
Kale looked at me closely. How about for today? We just focus on what matters, which is you and me.
The silence ticked between us as he stared at me, locking eye contact and not breaking it. The hairs on my neck stood straight up. Neither of us were touching the food now. I felt so content with him, and so safe. I wanted to be closer to him, to make everything better for Kale. I didn't fully understand the complexity of what I was feeling, but I knew that I loved him. Kale reached over, and his fingers circled my wrists, and he brought my hand to his chest, pulling my chair closer to him. The energy between us had changed so quickly that I could barely catch my breath. One second, we were eating and having a serious conversation, and the next, sparks were flying, and I was climbing onto his lap on the chair. His eyes held mine, and he sighed, relief pulling his shoulders down. One of his hands went to my hip, and the other pushed into my hair. Every single cell in my body danced and hummed under the warmth of his touch. His hand moved up my neck as we talked without words. He stopped at the base of my throat and squeezed very gently. I moved my body against his, my shorts against the thin cotton of his sweatpants. As I felt him grow harder, I dipped my body down farther. The friction felt like nothing I had ever experienced during my time on this earth. His lips touched my jawline, peppering their way across to my desperate lips.
Karina,
he began to say, still kissing me. The vibration of his phone in his pocket stopped my body from rocking against his. He reached into his pocket and grabbed his phone, which showed Mendoza's name on the screen, and he ignored the call. What if he's in trouble? I asked, climbing off his lap. I didn't move far. My body wouldn't allow me to. His phone rang again. This time he picked up.
Hey, what's up? You good?
He immediately asked. He looked up at me. The way his pupils were so small that they were drowning in a sea of cloudy brown made me eager to touch him again. I looked at his hands and he lifted one up to my face, gently running this thumb across my cheek. I felt like I was dreaming. I hoped everything with Mendoza was okay for his sake and Kale's and selfishly, even my own, since it was my birthday after all. Mendoza spoke for a few seconds before Kale moved the phone from his ear and tapped on the screen a few times. He touched the screen, sliding his thumb and pointer finger across it to zoom in and look closer.
Holy shit, where did you get that?
I was staring at Kale, expecting him to look at me again. He didn't. I couldn't hear what Mendoza was saying to him, and the not knowing slammed onto my nerves as I waited to find out what was happening.
Okay, do not send that to anyone, or even mention it, until we find out who started this and where it came from.
What the hell is going on? The words burned in my throat, dying to escape my mouth.
Okay, thanks. Keep me updated if Phillips reaches out to you.
He ended the call, speechless. What?
What's wrong?
My stomach dropped, thinking the worst for Mendoza or Elodie's husband. I was all around confused. Kale lifted the phone, turning it to me, and my eyes blinked, trying to make sense of what was on the screen. It was a picture of two people in an embrace in what looked like a parking lot. Within a few seconds, it dawned on me what Elodie's husband had to do with this picture. Elodie was in it. And the boy in the blue jeans and t-shirt with the disheveled blonde hair was Austin. I was staring at a photo of my brother and Elodie together. She was wearing the outfit she'd left the house in last night, and so was he. They were standing next to her car. Their arms were wrapped around one another, their lips touching. What the? I couldn't finish my thought when I heard what sounded like a car pulling into my driveway. I walked to the window to see an unfamiliar black car parked next to my house, and a driver opening the back passenger door. A soldier climbed out dressed in ACUs with buzzed black hair. It took me until he reached the grass, walking toward my porch, to realize who it was, since I had only seen him in pictures. Holy hell. It was Philip, in the flesh, with the worst possible timing on the planet. A note from the author. Hey you, thank you for picking this novel up and giving it a chance. Thank you for supporting storytellers and helping me continue to create and share my stories with the world. In such chaotic times, we often turn to music, novels, films, and knowing that my books are a part of that means everything to me. This story and its themes are very personally important to me, and I hope you feel that while turning the pages. I originally wrote a version of this novel a few years ago, just like The Falling, the first book in this series. And during the pandemic, I reread them both and decided to rework, rewrite, and revisit the story. I want to make you, the reader, and myself proud with the books I put into the world. So I undertook the long process of rewriting and republishing it. So thank you again for allowing me to do that and for supporting my wild ideas. Whether you're new to my work or have been reading me for years, I truly appreciate you giving your time and resources to support this series and authors around the world. In times of darkness, we turn to art, and being a part of that is everything to me. I can't thank you enough, and I truly hope you enjoy this book. This concludes the reading of The Burning by Anna Todd. Copyright 2023 by Frayed Pages, Inc. This book was read by Lauren Ezzo and Jamie Lincoln Smith.
This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Frayed Pages Inc. and Bookcase Literary Agency, and was produced in 2023 by Blackstone Publishing, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Publishing. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.